First, an advisory on forward-looking statements. This one's a little more to the point than you guys are normally used to, I'm sure. It basically says, I'm going to talk about PAYGO, I'm going to talk about natural gas prices, and I'm going to pull out my crystal ball, and I'm going to gaze into the future and try and see what I can see about PAYGO's future. And I'm going to try and be as honest as I can with you. And likely any prediction I make of the future is going to be all wrong, but in exchange for my honesty, you promise not to hold it against me. So if that sounds like a deal. Now, as many of the people in this room are aware, I see a lot of PAYGO employees, a lot of investors and bankers. PAYGO's undergone some amazing growth over the last 3 years. Basically, we've tripled the size of the company in 3 short years, and we've done it at a time when, arguably, the industry around us is struggling a lot. So I thought it might be interesting today to look at how that growth has happened, to do a comparison, really, between how we're conducting our business today versus how we used to conduct our business, maybe how we did it a decade ago, because I think a lot has changed over the last 10 years. Of course, one of the things that hasn't changed is the PAYGO strategy. That remains the same, even if how we accomplish that goal has changed. We still use our technical expertise, which has now been enhanced with 15 years of experience in the Deep Basin, to come up with opportunities to invest shareholders' capital to generate the maximum possible return. And we found over the years that to best execute this strategy, we do so by repeating what has worked rather than trying something new all the time. And, you know, I think perhaps at some times that's made us boring. People have said to me, you know, PAYGO's kind of boring. They just do the same kind of things all the time. But I think for most of us in this room who are investors and shareholders of PAYGO, I think we would argue that successful is better than interesting. And we like boring and successful, quite frankly, because I think also as seasoned veterans of the industry in this room, whether we be working in the industry or whether we be investors in the industry, we do have a healthy respect for how difficult this industry really is, despite how easy the PAYGO team makes it look. So with repeatability and predictability in mind, I guess it makes sense that we're still operating in the same areas that we were 10 years ago. The Alberta Deep Basin continues to offer for us more than enough opportunities, and we continue to be the ones who execute on those opportunities the most. Last year, for instance, just like 10 years ago, we were the most active driller in the Deep Basin. In fact, last year we drilled 4 times as many horizontal wells as in Canada, which is really quite something. Our land position's a little different than it was 10 years ago, though. It's still, of course, all in the Deep Basin, but having grown from 76 net sections to over 620 sections. That's a compound annual growth rate of 23% in our land base. But, you know, as everyone always says right now, just like they said 10 years ago, there's no more land to be had in the Deep Basin, and if you don't have it, you're not going to get any more. Surprisingly, we continue to add lands with drilling locations on them each and every year when we want to. And I think this is because this business is not so much about capturing land and capturing resources as it is about execution. I mean, if you can't execute on your lands, then what's the point of having them? So it's the same strategy as always in the same areas, which is basically to grow our assets over time and on a per share basis, because really that's what's important to the people in this room. Our production per share, our reserves per share, our cash flow per share in spite of falling gas prices, and our asset value per share have all been growing over time. And at the same time, if we have any growth, that has to be profitable, otherwise what's the point? And we ensure that our growth is profitable by controlling our costs. And really this too hasn't changed over PAYGO's history. All the costs that we control on a per unit of production basis. So the cost to find and develop new production, the operating costs, including transportation, the interest costs, the G&A costs. And it's interesting to note how costs have changed over time. Capital costs, or those FD&A costs, have tended to increase, while our cash costs have actually tended to decrease. So, as I mentioned, even though the strategy of PAYGO hasn't changed, how we execute that strategy is quite a bit different now than 10 years ago. And so I wanted to show you Like, let's look at the drilling and completion of a well, for instance. In the old days, we used to drill only vertical wells. We drilled 650 vertical wells over the first 10 years of Cato. And sometimes we would combine two zones in one well. We would do a dual completion. But we always had to fracture stimulate these tight sandstones to get them to flow. This example that I've pulled here is a Sundance well, a typical Sundance well. It's a dual completed Cardium Nauticuan well. At that time, it took 28 days to drill and 25 days to complete. And it cost, back then, $1.2 million for the drilling and another $1.2 million to complete. And we fracked the Nauticuan with a standard 80-ton, 2040 econoprop frack, and we fracked the Cardium with 70 tons in this vertical well. And the results of this well were, I would say they're not overly spectacular, they're sort of typical, average results of the types of wells we were drilling at the time. The Nauticuan came on at a couple million a day and declined down to a few hundred MCF a day. The Cardium came on at a few hundred MCF a day. It was pretty flat. InSight, or I guess it was Paddock Lindstrom back then, assigned reserves of 2.5 BCFE to this well. And really, to this point anyway, we've recovered about half of those reserves. Drainage areas were about 100 acres, so if you think about a section of land or a square mile having 640 acres, then we would need at least six wells done this way in order to develop the reserves. And so for $2.4 million to drill and complete, plus a couple hundred thousand to equip and tie in, plus the provision for land and seismic and facilities of $500,000, so we get to a full cycle number. This well costs a little north of $3 million, and we developed 2.5 BCFE of reserves for that. Or it's a full cycle PDP FD&A, if you will, of $1.24 an MCFE. And that was the old way. That's the way we used to do it. And the new way is quite a bit different, of course. Today we are drilling every layer separately using horizontal wells with multiple fracks or multi-stage frack well designs rather than the old vertical wells with a dual completion in them. And oftentimes we're able to drill this multiple horizontal wells from the same surface site using pad drilling technology, so we can utilize all the existing roads and the infrastructure more than once. And that saves us some money. So nowadays, a Nauticuan well is a 4,300-meter horizontal Nauticuan well. And it takes only 20 days to drill, including the 1,500 meters of horizontal lateral through the Nauticuan, which is obviously significantly faster than the 28-day vertical well that was only 2,700 meters deep. And that's, you know, all because of LEAP. No, I'm kidding. I mean, that's all because of the advancements that have been made in drilling technology and efficiency. There's bits and mud motors, and Dave can tell us about those too. You know, this well took another 11 days to complete by fracking the many stages and then running our tubing in. And this particular well cost $2.9 million to drill and $1.5 million for the completion. And we put eight 60-ton fracks along the horizontal. So 480 tons into this Nauticuan zone versus, remember, in the vertical well before, we did 80 tons. So a lot more stimulation. But, of course, if we want to compare this to that dual-completed well where we had both Cardium and Nauticuan developed, we have to drill now a horizontal Cardium well, too, to develop the Cardium. And so this would be a typical horizontal Cardium well that we're drilling these days, 3,100 meters in total length. They take 28 days or so to drill, which is actually longer than the Nauticuan because it's harder to drill sideways in the Cardium. It took another 14 days to complete. We put six 60-ton fracks along the horizontal, so 360 tons versus the 70 tons that we fracked the vertical well with. The drilling costs for this well were $2.2 million and the completion costs $1.9 million. And had we drilled this same well from the same site as the Nauticuan horizontal well, then we could have saved some money. We could have saved maybe $350,000 on rig move costs and lease construction costs. Maybe we'd save another couple hundred thousand on pipelining costs. We didn't in this case, but obviously we're going to try and do that more and more. And the results for these two horizontal wells, again, I think are pretty typical of Sundance. The Nauticuan came on at about $6 million a day, declined to $2 at the end of the first year. The Cardium came on at $1.7 million a day, declined to 600 MCF a day by the end of the first year. InSight assigned reserves to these two zones, or these two wells, 4 BCFE to the Nauticuan, 3 BCFE to the Cardium, including the liquids. We've already recovered about 20% of that in the first year or so. With drainage areas of closer to half a section, that means that, you know, two wells per section per zone, so maybe four horizontal wells to develop an entire square mile of resource here, as opposed to more than six vertical wells the old way. For the $4.8 million to drill, complete, equip, tie in this Notikewin well, and another $4.5 million to do the same for the Cardium, as well as about $1 million, say, for a provision for land seismic facilities, so we gross everything up to full cycle, we're getting about 7.5 BCFE of reserves developed. So that's a full cycle PDP FD&A of around $1.53, say. So if we compare the old way to the new way, I think this is neat. We would have to drill three vertical wells the old way with dual completions to equate to the same amount of reserves developed as two horizontal wells this new way. And, you know, arguably we could still do it cheaper the old way if we could do it at the same service costs and prices that we had 10 years ago. But sadly, we can't do that because the costs have not stayed the same as a decade ago. And really, practically speaking, we probably couldn't stack up the Cardium and the Notikewin in six wells in a section, the same way we can develop the individual layers independently with horizontal wells. So, I mean, at today's cost, though, that old way with the vertical wells, the estimates are about 30% more to drill and complete, probably another twice as much to do the tie-ins and the well site and the facilities that we need to install for that well. And so all told, the F&D costs for the old way with new costs would obviously be more than the new horizontal way that we're doing it today. And so obviously that's why we switched 3 years ago from drilling it the old way to drilling it the new way. We can get the reserves out faster, we get them out at better cost, and the economic returns today end up being as good as we used to have 10 years ago. Obviously, they're better than if we were to drill vertical wells today, but still the economic returns are only just as good as we used to have 10 years ago. And of course, since we started drilling this new way in the fall of 2009, we've now drilled over 250 horizontal wells this way. And our inventory of future locations has grown way faster than it used to grow because we're unlocking even greater potential resources in more zones in the Deep Basin, and it's allowing us to develop the reserves even faster than ever before. In fact, Lee Curran, our drilling manager, informs me that we have now drilled almost 1 million meters the new way, which I think makes us one of the most active horizontal drillers in the Deep Basin. And, you know, that gives us a huge advantage over our competition, just that amount of experience that we have drilling wells this way. And it's way more, like not just 20% more than our competition, it's 500% more than our competition. There's a couple other things operationally that we do today that are quite a bit different as well. One of them is we strip additional liquids out of our gas stream with an innovative Peyto-designed cheek cut facility. You've all probably heard me talking about that. And we started this process, installing this process at our Old Man gas plant last fall. It was brand new, it took a little bit. We had a few hiccups over Christmas, but we got it up and running this year. And ultimately, we can enhance all of our facilities this way to strip additional liquids if we want to, and if the economics to do so continues to make sense. Another thing we're doing differently is to displace more and more diesel from our operation in exchange for natural gas. Really, you know, there's no point in buying this expensive fuel when we produce a perfectly good and cheaper alternative in the form of natural gas. So last year we invested about $1.5 million or so to build a compressed natural gas fueling station at our Old Man gas plant central to our whole Sundance complex. That's going to allow us to use natural gas in drilling, completions, plant operations, and power generation, even for our field vehicles. And we're estimating that could save us up to $5 million a year. But the question is, from a shareholder standpoint, what's the economic impact of all of these changes, the changed way of doing things from a decade ago to today? You know, how do the economics look at the corporate level? Because, I mean, I've showed you economic savings at the well level, but quite frankly, the only guy that ever seems to be invested in the well level is Aubrey McClendon. We all get to be shareholders in Peyto. We get to buy stock, so we got to see how do these things impact the economics at the corporate level. And at the corporate level, when we compare what it costs us these days to build it and produce it versus what it cost us a decade ago, I think there's some interesting observations here. First of all, we're not selling it for any more than we were a decade ago, which is very frustrating. In fact, less. 7% less price realized over the last 3 years versus the decade prior. And yet, both at the individual well level, where I showed you some numbers, and at the corporate level here, it costs us a lot more to build it. The total FD&A cost on a proved producing basis is up 144% over the last 10 years, which means we've seen about a 9% compound inflation in our costs over the last decade, which is pretty big. We've had inflation in service cost rates, we've had inflation in labor costs, we've had big inflation in fuel costs, all of those things increasing the cost of building. And really, the costs are increased whether we do it with horizontal wells or we do it with vertical wells. Either way. I mean, you just look at the difference in oil and gas prices over the last decade. Gas used to trade at close to its oil equivalent a decade ago, and now oil trades at 5 times the equivalent price of natural gas. And until we really get all the diesel out of our operations and replace it with natural gas, this continues to put pressure on a business of finding and producing and selling natural gas. Service rates are more today, too. As I mentioned, labor has gone up a lot. Materials to build drilling rigs have gone up. We've seen significant inflation here too. So the drilling rig rates shown here are for a vertical well that we used 10 years ago, and what those changes have happened over time. You've seen there's lots of inflation there too. So it costs us more to build it now versus before, which is, again, obviously frustrating because we're not selling it for more. But interestingly, it costs us less to produce it. And a lot of this is due to lower royalty rates, but at the same time, we've maintained the same cash costs over the last decade that we had over all that time, which I think is really impressive, because when you consider the inflation that the industry and our peers have seen in their cash costs, it's significant. I mean, you take away the royalty changes, and our peers have seen 8% compound inflation in their cash costs over the last decade. And Peyto's costs are virtually the same as they were 10 years ago. So it really does show you, relatively speaking, how good a job the team at Peyto's done of controlling the costs. And this cost control was especially important last year when we had to endure the lowest natural gas prices in Peyto's history. Over the last 15 years, we've never seen a gas price as low as $2.30 a gigajoule on average. And yet we still managed to generate a 22% profit margin that year. So really, I guess the bottom line is that even though how we're doing it today is quite a bit different from how we used to do it 10 years ago, Peyto's ability to control its costs so that we're always generating a profit, well, that really hasn't changed. And really, that's the only important thing that matters to people in this room. Maintaining our flexibility so that we can adapt to this changing and volatile commodity price, so that we can incorporate new technology, so that we're always generating a profit. There's a couple of more things that are a little bit different about Peyto than a decade ago that I'd like to show you. For one, we have found and developed into production a lot more reserves over the last decade. Producing reserves have grown from 250 BCFE to 950 BCFE, or at a 14% compound annual rate. And that was by basically reinvesting our cash flow. In fact, we have recently crossed over the 1 trillion cubic foot mark for proved producing reserves. Does everybody recognize Dr. Evo? You know, this 1 trillion cubic feet, that makes Peyto one of the largest producers in Canada. And we all fit in this little room. Our staff's on this side, and we have investors on that side. With this reserve number, we would be the 10th largest of the non-integrated producers. And with almost 9 years of producing reserve life, that means we've got a lot of reserves that are going to be exposed to the future potential increases in natural gas. And while our reserves are bigger, our production too is a lot bigger, with absolute production having grown by a compound annual growth rate of 16% over the last 10 years. Or really, over the last 3 years, we've been growing it at about a 40% compound rate. And thankfully, the new pens arrived just in time, so hopefully you've all received a 60,000 BOE a day pen. If you don't, Janine has them at the back that we are using to commemorate that milestone. Our net debt is bigger today, too. You know, that's definitely more than 10 years ago. And I see we've got a few of our bankers here today. We've definitely used a bit of their money to accelerate our growth over the last decade. So I'll thank them today for their support and assure them that we're good for it. But we now have an organization that comfortably supports over $1 billion of unsecured credit, which I think is another milestone. It just shows you how unique PAYGO really is in the Canadian energy space. We started as a grassroots junior with nothing, and now we've grown to a company with essentially an investment-grade rating. And that is very rare in the Canadian energy industry. Very rare. But not to worry. I mean, our current debt levels are still only a fraction of our producing reserve space. We've consistently kept them at about a quarter of our producing asset value, so we've only levered a little bit. And we found, as we move forward, of course, into the future, our debt levels relative to our growing funds from operations and growing production, that's going to continue to improve. So that leaves us at the end of the day with a stronger balance sheet. And so I said I was going to dig out my crystal ball and tell you about what the future holds for PAYGO. That's what everybody's always so interested in. For 2013, you've all heard we have planned the largest capital program in the company's history, at $500 million. Did I get to do that again? An all-organic investment in drilling, completions, building pipelines, facilities, buying new land, shooting seismic. The program is planned to be a very balanced program, just like our 2012 program. So we've got 8 to 10 drilling rigs spread across our land base and targeting the various zones within that Cretaceous package in the Deep Basin that has the sweet, liquids-rich natural gas in it. We're also continuing to invest in infrastructure to preserve that operating cost advantage that we have over the industry. Another 80 million a day of processing capacity is going to get built this year. And that should bring our total processing capacity to over 500 million cubic feet a day of processing capacity, which is a fantastic midstream asset that we've got in-house. And as always, we have development and exploratory activity scheduled for a couple of new areas. I've started them there, and we'll continue to look at all opportunities in the Deep Basin because, quite frankly, this team is an expert at it. We expect for next year that by offsetting a similar decline to last year of about 35%, this capital program for 2013 will give us exit production close to 67,000 BOEs a day. So we're going to be getting close to printing up new pens. Or a 61,000 BOE a day average for the year, which is up 35% over the 45,000 barrels a day in 2012. That assumes, of course, that we're going to add it at the same capital efficiencies, that 17,500 of flowing BOE that we've had for the last 3 years. But we've got a pretty good track record of doing just that. And if we're successful with this program, then 2013 is going to be another banner year for PAYGO. And don't worry that the declines are increasing too much. As production ages, the annual declines become less and less. We saw that through a period 2001 to 2005. We were growing our production. Declines were going down. That means each and every year as we move forward, it's going to get easier and easier to grow. It's one of the really nice features of tight gas. Our goals for 2003 are very similar to past years. We're going to continue to lead the industry with respect to those cost pieces that we control. We're targeting a building cost of $2 an MCFE. Plan to use our pad drilling, compressed natural gas powered rigs, improvements in our drilling designs and our completion designs, optimization of our water to help get us to that $2 F&D goal. We're attempting to keep production costs and total cash costs at that dollar level, dollar an MCFE, only $6 a BOE. Again, we're going to use some natural gas in our operations. We're going to try and keep our facilities full and our run times high and maintain high efficiency in our field operations. We've got a lean staff here in Calgary, and we've got access to some pretty cheap debt. And with our current hedge book and the extra liquids extraction from our old man cheap cut, we expect that the sales price on the future strip right now is going to put us close to $5 an MCFE. And all of that then should yield close to a 40% profit margin, which I think is the highest in the industry that I've seen, which would be awesome, especially considering that our current dividend is a dollar an MCFE, which is only half of that profit. So where's PAYGO going beyond all of that, beyond next year's great big capital program? And this is where my crystal ball gets really sort of cloudy. But, you know, there are a couple of things that I do know with a lot of certainty. And one of them is that we have a very proven strategy of execution. And I think over the last year, 3 years, nobody can question that. Can PAYGO grow? Absolutely we can grow. And look how we can grow. we have in front of us a massive inventory of drilling and opportunities. And it's growing every day. Dave and his team and the landmen and the engineers, they're constantly working to build on that inventory of opportunities that we've got. We have an increasingly strong balance sheet. And basically, we've got access to loads of cheap capital. And we have a cost advantage over the rest of the industry that makes us the envy of the entire Canadian industry. People are always asking, how do you guys get the costs? Oftentimes, they think we just lie. But, you know, I think most importantly what we have at Peyto is we have the best team of professionals in the industry, bar none. I truly believe that, this Peyto team is the best. And that, in combination, is going to take us as far as we want to go. And so I guess the big question is anybody interested in drilling their way to 100,000 barrels a day? So I think we could do it. And it would never have been done before. There's never been an E&P company in the Canadian industry that's drilled its way from zero to 100,000 barrels a day. It's fun to think about what it might be like then, you know, as a shareholder. The production per share would have grown like crazy. I mean, the earnings that we would be generating at that point, the dividends we could pay. That's exciting stuff. But you know what? Maybe we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. Maybe we should just focus on the next well. We'll make some money on that one, and the rest is all going to come with time. And as you can see from this picture that was taken on Monday, you could help us by praying for some sunshine, because it's pretty muddy up north, apparently. And we're having trouble getting all 10 of our rigs running. Anyway, you know, that's it. That's all I wanted to say today. Thank you all for coming. Before we adjourn or really take any questions, I want to, on behalf of the board of directors of Peyto, on behalf of all the shareholders of Peyto, send out a big thank you to the Peyto team and acknowledge their efforts. It's been an unbelievable accomplishment over the last few years. And so for those shareholders in the room, I hope you join me in a little round of applause for the Peyto team.